This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm, Zuji.com, an online travel agent providing flights and hotels bookings worldwide, Mint.com, personal budgeting and financial management software, and GoToWebinar, unlimited webinars for one low rate. Go to ChinaMoneyNetwork.com and click on our sponsors links. Thank you, everyone, so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Christopher Tai, President and Chief Investment Officer of Tai Capital Corporation, a long-short global equity manager headquartered in New York City. Christopher talked with me over the phone while he was in New York City and I was in Hong Kong. Here is our conversation.
Hi, Christopher. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, Nina.
We're going to talk about your funding, your strategies, and how that is relevant to China. Let's talk a little bit about your family, because your family has a very incredible story in finance. Your grandmother was the only woman trading on the Shanghai Stock Exchange during the Second World War. Do you know much about how it was like being a trader back then?
Sure. I mean, it was exceptionally rare for a married woman to have such an active role in financial matters at the time. My grandmother, Ruth Tsai, was the only woman who traded on the floor of the Shanghai Stock Exchange until the exchange closed in December 1941, when Japanese troops took control of the Shanghai International Settlement. The invasion of the troops brought an abrupt end to the operation of the exchange. But until that time, my grandmother traded stocks, she traded gold and other commodities. She found it incredibly intellectual and exciting. I remember her telling me that directly. Because the Shanghai Exchange back then, after all, was the financial center of the Far East. People could also trade debentures, government bonds, and futures. Though I think my grandmother really didn't get involved in those areas.
So how did she get to become a trader long before it was fashionable?
My grandmother took an interest in finance at an early age, having grown up in Shanghai, and she was exposed to many people in finance from an early age, just as I was.
Did she ever tell you about how a trade was done back then?
She never told me the specifics.
Now let's move on to your father, Garrett Tsai, who also had an incredible career in finance. Tell us briefly the most major accomplishment during his lifetime.
If you were to ask him, he would say that his biggest career accomplishment was becoming the first Chinese American to lead a Dow Jones 30 company. My father, Gerald, became chief executive officer of American Can back in 1986, and through numerous acquisitions and divestitures, he transformed the company into the financial services powerhouse Primerica, and he acquired Smith Barney at Primerica and merged Primerica eventually with Sandy Weill's Commercial Credit. And that became the foundation for what is Citigroup today. But even before the 1980s, my father had many accomplishments. For example, in 1965, he launched the Manhattan Fund, which was an aggressive growth fund. And that offering was the most successful in American history. He raised about $250 million. And then before that, he ran Fidelity Capital Fund and helped to build Fidelity Investments into a mutual fund powerhouse.
What is the biggest, if you would say, the most valuable lesson that you have learned from him in investing?
I think that the most valuable lesson that I learned from him is the importance of preserving capital. so many investors place too much emphasis on just making money, and they forget about the importance of protecting capital. So at Psi Capital, we're focused not only on looking at companies that have significant growth potential, but we also place significant emphasis on protecting our clients' assets.
Now let's talk about Psi Capital. Tell us a little bit about the firm and also your strategy.
Sure. Well, I founded Psi Capital in 1997 after having worked for two highly respected investment managers, Mario Gabelli and John Levin, and after having worked at Bear Stearns as an equities analyst. At Psi Capital, we're really focused on the long term. We focus on a limited number of high quality growth companies that we think have significant upside potential and a margin of safety at the time of purchase. And we really prefer to stay invested so long as the fundamental and the qualitative characteristics of a business remain favorable. We also believe in concentration as opposed to diversification. And this means that in our long short equity fund, we generally invest in 10 to 15 high quality names. And we think that by focusing on our best ideas, we gain a performance and due diligence advantage. And when it comes to shorting, we're different from other managers because we really take a directional approach and we prefer to short indexes as opposed to just individual equities. By focusing on indexes, we can provide significant protection to our core holdings. These are the types of businesses that we want to hold for the long term. So it makes sense for us.
Let me ask you about the concentration of your portfolio. If you have a very concentrated portfolio, how do you manage your downside risk?
I think by holding 10 to 15 positions, we are concentrated, but we do have enough diversification within the portfolio. If you think about a portfolio of 15 names, it's about 6 to 7% in each position. And we use the short book to really add protection to those core holdings. So when we sell short an index, it provides a natural hedge to those 10 to 15 companies that we own on the long side.
Can you give us an example of how the strategy works in practice? Like, what are some directional short positions that you see?
Sure. Well, when we launched the fund in 2011, we said from the beginning that we really wanted to minimize our short exposure for the time being because our sense was the market was moving higher as a result, primarily because corporate earnings were growing, but also because there was so much money printing. So we've really had a minimal amount of short exposure on since the fund launched in 2011. But when we think that the environment is changing and we start to see yellow flags and certainly red flags, then we will increase our short book to hedge out the long positions that we own.
Do you see many yellow flags or red flags now?
Actually, we look at about 10 indicators, and only two of the 10 indicators are checked right now. So we think that this bull market has quite a bit more room to run. And by that, I mean at the end of a bull market, you typically see euphoria. Today, it's quite the opposite. Most people are skeptical of the market advance in the States. There's so much cash on the sidelines.
You do have some sort of focus on China because you focus on high growth companies. Are there any particular Chinese companies that you like or you dislike?
There are a number of companies that we like and dislike in China. One company that we like in particular is a business called Jardine Matheson, which is a company that was formed in 1832 as a trading company. It run out of Hong Kong, but has its primary listing on the London Stock Exchange and a secondary listing on the Singapore Exchange. we like the fact that the company is exposed to many areas of different industries throughout mainland China and Hong Kong. Its primary asset is a company called Dairy Farm. And Dairy Farm is the leading Pan-Asian retailer. The company has about 5,700 supermarkets and other types of stores throughout Southeast Asia. Dairy Farm also owns a 50% interest in a business called Maxim's, which is a leading restaurant business in Hong Kong and China. They have about 810 outlets. Jardine has a significant investment in a company called Jardine Cycle and Carriage, which owns a controlling stake in Astra, which is Indonesia's leading automobile manufacturer and distributor. So if you add up all of the pieces between Dairy Farm and the Jardine's interest in Astra, its private businesses that the company owns, we think the stock is worth about $90 a share, and the stock trades for about $60 today. So it sells at a significant discount to its intrinsic value, and that intrinsic value has also been growing at about 20% a year for the past 10 years.
Sorry, when you say $90 per share, you meant what is that?
We would say that intrinsic value means what the parts of the company are worth to a knowledgeable acquirer. If the company were to be sold or its pieces right, valued separately, that the stock would be worth $90. The book value of the business is about $50 a share, and the stock trades at 60. So the stock trades for about 120% of book value.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. With central banks around the world printing unprecedented amounts of paper money, maybe it's time to consider investing in gold and silver again? Visit goldsilver.com by clicking on their banner on chinamoneynetwork.com. You can learn everything about investing in gold and silver, place an order to buy the precious metal, or incorporate your investments into your IRA account. Goldsilver.com can also physically store your gold and silver, ship them for you to over 40 countries around the world. Click the gold and silver banner on chinamoneynetwork.com. Are you a pro trader who needs all the professional trading tools right at your hands? Options, shorting, leverage, lightning fast execution? Then shorttrader.com is the answer for you. Trade up to 1,000 shares for only $4.95 per trade. Pay only $1 per option contract. Get 6-to-1 intraday or 2-to-1 overnight leverage on margin over securities above $3 with a $500 account minimum. Short Trader also offers you the largest shortlist, and you can send orders instantly and use real-time market prices. Click on shorttrader.com's banner on chinamoneynetwork.com and sign up for your account and start trading like a pro.
Why do you think the market is giving a discount to the stock?
The market has historically given a discount to the stock because it's a complex company to understand. There are a lot of pieces. And the Keswick family controls the company through a cross-ownership structure. And so it's the opinion of investors that the company is unlikely to be sold or broken up. But that to us is actually a positive. We know that the company's stock is less than its private market value. We also know that that private market value is growing every year. And yes, there's been a certain discount that has historically been associated with the stock, but we're perfectly content in letting that discount remain, because we're, again, interested in buying into companies for the long term. We don't want the company to get taken over. We would rather be a long-term investor in a business that's growing at 20% a year. So next year, the private market value of the company we forecast at a bit over $100 a share. And if the stock were to sell at the same discount as today, then the stock would go up to around 70 bucks a share. And then the following year in 2016, we actually have our intrinsic value forecast at about $116 a share. So at that point, if the discount were to stay the same, the stock would move up by another 16% or so.
How long do you plan to hold on to the stock?
We prefer to hold the stock indefinitely.
How did you find this company and what kind of research process you went through?
Well, I read a lot. As I mentioned earlier, one of my positions before starting Psi Capital was being an equity analyst at Bear Stearns, and I actually focused on the food industry. So I was familiar with dairy farm for quite a while.
What are some other high growth sectors that you think will be attractive for you in places like Asia and China?
There are several areas. The credit card industry is still very much in its early stages, and it has so much potential outside of Asia as well, in Latin America, and even in more developed markets like Europe and in the States. People are increasingly paying with plastic, and we think that the credit card companies and the card processors have a bright future. The consumer product area is one area that also has tremendous potential. So more and more people, we think, will not only be able to afford these products like toothpaste and detergent, but they will use them more frequently. So we think companies like Colgate-Palmolive, for example, which has a significant presence throughout Asia, will be a prime beneficiary.
But I mean, this area may not be really high growth areas like your focus.
Well, we think it's a high growth area because you have spending that's going to increase by more than 6 times over a roughly 20-year period. That's a pretty significant growth rate. And if a company can really leverage that, not only from tapping into that growing market, but by also becoming more efficient as a business like Colgate-Palmolive has become in the past, that can translate into a significant amount of earnings growth.
So you launched your fund in 2011. During the past several years, it has been really tough for fund managers to raise funds, particularly for smaller funds and also for first-time managers. Can you share your experience of your fundraising process?
Yes. Well, our long-short strategy, we think, has resonated really well with high-net-worth individuals, and we've raised money since the fund launched just about 3 years ago in June of 2011. Institutions like our strategy, but they prefer to invest in funds that have a longer-term track record. So I think they are concerned that some funds will not even be in business if they don't get to a certain size. I think that's a valid concern, but fortunately for Psi Capital, we're a well-funded operation, so we don't have the capital problem that some smaller funds have. In fact, we have excess capital and are investing some of our proprietary money in private companies through Psi Ventures. So my advice for others trying to raise funds is to make sure that your business has the staying power to develop a track record and to invest always with consistency. If you say you're long-term, like we say we're long-term, it's important one acts that way. No one wants any surprises.
Is it also another lesson to learn from your experience that when the institutions say no to you because of a lack of track record, maybe wealthy individuals or other type of institutions without that kind of restrictions should be more of a targeted audience for you to try to raise capital from?
Absolutely. Different investors have different concerns. And certainly institutions, many institutions have to check off certain boxes for their own guidelines. And one of those boxes is that a track record is 3 years of length or 5 years, or assets under management are 100 million or a billion. And individuals often don't really place much emphasis on some of those factors.
Now, since your fund has been around for 3 years, you are accumulating a track record, which is very important and essential the first few years. How has your performance been?
Well, then the fund launched in June of 2011, and we're up about 26.5% net through March of this year. So the track record is a little less than 3 years, and that translates into somewhere around 8.5% compounded annually on a net basis. It's very important for us that we focus on the consistency of the return. We're not looking for home run situations. Most of our clients are already significantly wealthy. They're not looking to win the lottery. What they do want is to know that their asset will appreciate on a consistent basis over time.
Lastly, you just launched a venture fund. Tell us a little bit about what type of industries or sectors you're targeting with this fund.
Sci Ventures is the seed and early stage venture capital arm of Sci Capital Corporation. And our focus is on finance, media, and travel. These are areas that we think we know well.
Great. Christopher, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.